I just love getting unfiltered and unfettered. And now, here's Tony and Fran.
And live, this is Unfiltered Unfettered from the Monolith, Studio 1B. This is your co-host, Tony the Bully Opinionist, along with my partner and original Jersey Devil, the Pope of the podcast, Sir Francis One. Kiss the ring, Fran, good evening.
Hey, good evening, Tony. Man, it feels like, I don't know why, but it just feels like forever since the last one, and it was only a week ago. Doesn't it seem like...
It was only a week ago.
It just seems like a lot has happened in between.
There's so much... Well, the draft happened.
Yes, the draft. You texted me on the draft night, and I thought, wow, he's already drinking because the Browns didn't draft Manziel? He sends me a text that says, are we launching this baby? And I'm like, what in God's name is he talking about? And I realized I had forgot to post the...
Yes.
Post the, the podcast with the... onto the blog. So I'm sorry for anyone who gets it off the podcast and it was up late. That's my fault. But I thought Tony was drunker than a skunk during the draft.
I was not. I was watching the resurgence of the Cleveland Browns.
This is it, baby. This is it.
Johnny Football, baby.
Josh has got me believing.
we're believing, man.
I like that pick. You like Johnny Manziel, that pick?
Loved it. Yeah. What, 22? How can you not like? Now, he's a polarizing figure. So if you're a Browns fan at this point, you love him. If you're anybody else, you just hate him. And I've already been hearing those comments.
I like it. I mean, I'm not, you know... I'm going to be interested to watch the Browns games this year.
I mean, they had some good drafts. And since last Thursday, the media has talked more about the Cleveland Browns than they have collectively for the last 10 years.
Well, and then their owner, our very own Mr. Haslam, came out and said, he's not going to be the starter. Yeah, I don't know about that.
Here's another rule. We have some rules for politicians. Right. Here's a rule for sports owners. Rule number one, if you're an owner and you get quoted in the paper... It's normally not a good thing.
Right. It's never going to work out well for
you. Just keep your mouth shut and let them...
Like he don't have his own problems he's got to deal with, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Our owner, Jimmy Haslam, who has a few legal difficulties with his company, Pilot.
From right here, from right here in Knoxville.
And his brother, who is the governor.
The governor, right.
Doesn't have those same problems, but is the...
Dana Carvey look-alike. A potential presidential candidate in 2020.
He could be. Absolutely. All right. Another big week. Got some interesting things to talk about this evening.
It's getting juicy, man. Look, we're right there on the edge. We've been really dry on the blog.
Yeah.
But we are right on the cusp of the insane political season coming, and we're right there, and Karl Rove has pushed us one bigger step closer to that.
Yes, he has. We'll talk about that in a second. We got our Shotgun and News Hardcore Politics, another edition of Political Pop Quiz.
Oh, nice.
Some of your favorites, so let's kick this off.
Okay, boys, let's get started. Give me both barrels and shotgun that news.
Fran, out of the gate tonight, one of our favorites we haven't talked about for a while. Well, actually, we like to talk about Kim Jong. Tonight it's just about North Korea.
Right. This is really one of the first kind of unnamed sources quote we get out of North Korea.
Yeah.
But let's face it. Nobody in North Korea is saying anything unless a dear leader is letting them say it. And so they have called Obama
a wicked black monkey.
I don't know why that makes me laugh, but it does.
The article also calls Obama a crossbreed with unclear blood. Mm. Okay, so throwing some epithets out there, they shouldn't be saying those kinds of things. It is outrageous. I think they should be banned for life and fined $2.5 million myself.
You know, the way that country's run, I believe they have been banned for quite a while. How serious should we take it? You know what I mean? Like, is this one that, do you think Obama's sitting there getting, like pissed? Like, I'm not sure this is ruffling all that many feathers. I think it's more funny than anything else.
Yeah.
What kind of street cred do they really have?
Yeah.
That you're going to get upset about this. I mean, we're not going to nuke them because they called our president a monkey.
All right. Next. Okay. The architect, Karl Rove, who, you know, came out and questioned Hillary Clinton's health. That's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Right? He questioned it by saying he thinks she has brain damage.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like...
Because she had a nasty fall. She was in the hospital for a period of time.
An unexplained passing out, and she fell and ended up in the hospital for a while.
Yeah. And then she was seen in public wearing some glasses that are special for people that are having symptoms of concussions.
Right.
I think. Right. So he's come out and said he thinks that she's got brain damage.
And then he said the next day, I guess, backing it up or doubling down, I think, is the doubling down is the phrase that the politicians like to use and the analysts like to use. He came out and then said that her health will be an issue in the 2016 race, which is kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, like, you're a guy who frames that race, so now you've just made her health a question during the race. You know what I mean? It's all disingenuous to me about Karl Rove. I can't believe he kind of stooped. You know, this feels like a stooping low type of thing. You know, we were talking before that way back in 2002, maybe, and the Democrats sent Barbara Boxer out there to annihilate the character of someone, an up-and-comer. And she pretty much ended her political career. What she's doing is all she's ever going to do. Any aspirations she would have had disappeared at that moment. Rove's not in the same position because he's not a politician. He's just an analyst. But this kind of feels like that. Like, he's just gone like the scumbag route.
Well, I mean, at one time he really was heralded for being... I mean, he got the nickname of the architect.
Right, but he was never going to be...
engineer campaigns. Right.
You know, he apexed in the Bush... You know, he's never going to be in anyone else's administration.
Right. But so when he does stuff like this, it just comes off tawdry.
Right. I mean, yeah. I think he lessens himself when he does stuff like this. You know, this is more that you would get out of, forgive the expression, you know, the right wing nut job.
Yeah.
Extremists would say something like this, and it's not going to play well. It's not going to help Republicans.
Right.
You know, you're not helping, bro. You know, this is just going to be one more hurdle they have to climb in the war on women that they're being accused of constantly. This is another bad move by Big Karl.
Well, like I told you earlier, the only way you should pull a move like this is if you have undisputable proof that it's true, and he doesn't.
Right.
He can't.
And he can't. And if he does have it, he can't say that he has it because then he's violating her HIPAA rights.
Right.
So, yeah, just a bad move.
All right, next. An issue that's not going to go away for some time is the continuing Ukraine crisis. They have pro-Russian separatists.
Kiev says they can no longer control the eastern half of the country.
Yeah,
that was a bold. I was really stunned when they, you know, when they came out and admitted that they have no way now to protect or control the eastern half of their country. You know, you had talked about three or four podcasts ago, you know, that he's going to take it to the river.
Yeah,
he's got that. I mean, basically, based on what the president of Kiev is, president of Ukraine is saying, he's got that, and he's going past that. I don't think the river's holding him back. I think as this separatist, quote-unquote, separatist movement continues to grow, he's going to push on past.
I think that he'll stabilize east of the river.
Right.
But I don't know that he'll stop there.
Well,
I agree.
He can't. Because if you look at the end game of all this, the oil's in the western part of the country.
Right.
That's where he has to get to. Because they can still shut that off and block Russian oil from getting to the European Union. So he has to get to Kiev. I mean, that's really the bottom line. That might not happen this year, but he's laying the groundwork to do it.
And, yeah, it's not going to come to a resolution anytime soon.
No.
Okay, next. And, Fran, back in, actually, January, I think, of 2013, I blogged about a post called Benghazi, Mali, in Algeria. And I talked about the ongoing Muslim crisis, particularly in northern and central Africa. That continues to grow and be a crisis situation. Now we've got the radical Islamist group that has kidnapped the 300 children. Mali, which for a period of years was a fairly stable democratic country, has been overrun by some Islamic terrorist group that have instituted Sharia law. They've engaged in amputations, executions, all this kind of stuff. You know, France is involved in Mali. They've launched in military interventions in 2013. And then now, of course, we've got this crisis with these kids over there, with these young women that have been kidnapped.
Yeah.
And who knows what's going to happen with them. But, you know, I just see this displacement. You know, we went to Iraq, we went to Afghanistan, and the shift started to occur. And now... Yeah. It's establishing strongholds. We know that there have been problems in Somalia. I mean, you can't hardly name a northern African country that hasn't been impacted by the radical Islam And right. this is going to continue to grow as a crisis.
We don't. I think history has shown, no matter the administration, we don't do the Middle East well.
No.
From Carter to Reagan to Clinton to Bush. I mean, they all have led up to this moment, and the current president doesn't seem interested. So yeah. We're not doing these people a service. And like I say, I agree. It's just been getting
worse.
Well,
he's got Kerry running things. So, I mean, just serve notice right. that this is a crisis that's going to continue to get worse.
Yeah. Hillary's African... not looking so bad all of a sudden, is she?
Yeah, that's right. Okay, next. Oh, and in another beautiful story we got here.
Oh, come on, dude. He's your favorite.
The 75th United States Secretary of the Treasury, Tim Geithner, was previously the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York from 2003 to 2009. He now serves as president of Warburg Pincus, a Wall Street private equity firm. Released a book, I'm talking about Tim Geithner.
Oh, yeah.
In which he pretty much blatantly said the Clinton administration. He actually talked about Dan Pfeiffer. Sorry, the P is silent.
Yeah, like Fisher Fawcett.
I got caught up. He basically says in his book, he told me to go out there and say some stuff that wasn't true, because it would be a dog whistle, was the term for the left.
That's the other one, dog whistle, yeah.
And so now in the media, he had a conversation with Brett Baer. I don't know if you see it.
No, I have not.
And dude, it's nothing but doublespeak. It is nothing but double. No, well, Dan was just trying to help me. You know, it's... and then we go into about a minute and a half of gobbledygook. You know, he didn't want the proposals to be vulnerable to misinterpretation. Dan was just trying to be helpful by pointing out that we didn't want to look at people to look at our proposals. Proposals were going to appear as they were cutting Social Security. And Brett Baer asked him whether Social Security contributes to the deficit. And he said, well, you know, to long-term fiscal problems? Well, yeah, it's obvious. It's just a math thing, he says.
it's that funny math, yeah.
It's that funny math
thing. Well, did he talk about
thing.
The fact that he asked to resign? He tried to resign in the first year? Did he mention that in the
oh,
interview?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he was literally trying to quit in the first year that he was Obama's economic
The book,
guy.
Which is not out yet, and I'll say I haven't read it. We've only seen excerpts. His book makes it sound like it was a rocky road, but now he's coming out in the media and saying, you know, I didn't really mean all that. I didn't really mean for you to take it.
It's out of context.
That
right?
way, you know. Dude, how much time and effort, you would know, Francis, does it take to write a book and for that book to try to accurately represent what you're right. going to say? And then you just come out in the media as soon as a couple excerpts are released and go, no. That is not what
yeah,
that means.
No, I'm with you. I'm in the middle of one that I'm on my just stories of my own
yeah,
existence
right. your
with
own
my
experiences.
Kids.
Sure.
I don't even have to look up references, and this has been a 2-year experiment. So, no, he's full of beans.
That's beautiful. Tim Geithner. All right, next. Okay, and Francis, in a story that quite frankly is becoming rapidly disinteresting to me, Donald Sterling goes on Anderson Cooper.
That is the funny part, right? It's becoming so bad, it's almost no longer fun to look at. But yeah, so he reaches out. He's not given a statement, not put out a statement, not anything. He reaches out to Anderson Cooper to go on AC360.
And we're talking about Donald Sterling.
Donald Sterling, the owner of the Clippers, who, you know, the with all the racist remarks and all that. The wife says she's divorcing him. You know, he's got dementia. I'm keeping the team and the family. So he goes on Anderson Cooper. And he immediately attacks Anderson Cooper and says, well, you're a bigger racist than me, Anderson. You know, and you know, as Dan Patrick said this morning or yesterday, I think it might have been actually, you don't go on. Anderson Cooper is a seasoned interviewer. You are not going to win that battle. You're just not. You're an 83 or 80 whatever year old man without a publicist or without a PR guy. He's going to chew you up. He's going to ask you tough questions. And so what happens? He immediately launches into... Magic Johnson has AIDS. He didn't do
not
anything.
AIDS, Francis. The AIDS.
The AIDS, right. Like my grandmother used to say. He's got the AIDS, right? So, without the S on the end. So, then he segues. Well, look at Magic Johnson. He's not some big example to the blacks. He, you know, he went and had sex with all those women in every city, and now he's got the AIDS, and he hasn't done anything for blacks. I mean, but look at the Jews, he says. And then, you know, that's what we have to add that to our list. If you start a phrase with a sentence with "look at the Jews," you've lost,
right?
So he says, "Well, look at the Jews. When one of theirs makes it good, they help out." Well, Magic Johnson hasn't helped his people. I helped his people more. Like, really, bro? Just put on your hood. I mean, what do you, and then you watch it, you just think, seriously, I'm being serious now. He probably has got dementia. Don't you think? I mean, that's
absolutely.
I don't think that's just a derogatory thing. I think that might absolutely. Be a problem. Because he was incoherent. Like, you could hear what he was saying. I mean, he wasn't mumbling his words incoherent, but his thought process was incoherent. Like, he could not get from A to B without talking about those people, whether it was Jews or Mexicans or blacks or whatever. And you think, dude, just shut up.
Well, there are different forms of dementia, and I don't know. He frequently doesn't make sense to me.
Right, right.
And this whole, and you know, we were talking about this earlier. There's some weird, odd thing between him and
right.
Magic Johnson.
Yeah, there's
because some. Part of the time he talks like Magic Johnson, like he's almost a friend. And Magic Johnson has even said him and Sterling have had this kind of odd relationship right. over the years, where Sterling calls him and asks him for advice, and then Sterling is running him through the ringer in the media. And I mean, what does that mean to anyone
right.
when you're talking about Magic Johnson? It's just, the guy needs to go away. The only thing that I would almost like to see, because so many of these players have said if he owns a team next year, they're not going to play. I would almost like to see him.
I agree that. I would
just to see what happens.
See if they do it. I'm with you. As soon as I heard some of those guys, LeBron, a lot of the,
I know.
We're not talking about bench players. Some of the biggest names in the game said, if he still owns that team in a year, we're not playing. I want to see that.
Right.
I want to see them put their money where their mouth is, and because they're immediately going to get fined their salaries. There's no way
yeah.
the commissioner will be able to go away without fining them their salaries for not playing, breaking their contracts. I got to see that.
It will be like somebody peeing in the punch.
Right.
Because the thing is, this guy might he might be on the slide, but he's got a lot of
right.
money to throw at people to fight this for a long time.
And you can forget him. His wife is already suing
her
to keep
as well.
The team.
Right.
So if she does that, and players have said they want the entire family out of the NBA. So she's already started the process. If she sues, there's no way this gets done in a year.
Right,
I got it. It'll be the most watched opening day of NBA in the history of the game. I can't wait to see what happens when half these players don't come out and play.
I agree, man. I'd like to see that happen just to see what happens. All right.
Let's get hardcore.
We're on the precipice of an issue here,
yeah.
Fran, that may not go very well. We're going to see, and we're going to talk. We're talking about the Benghazi Commission. There's some stakes involved here.
Yes. And look, I mean, this is something that you and I are pretty passionate about because we feel like four Americans were left out to dry and were killed. Now, whether or not they would have survived is another discussion, but no one even tried to help them. So this is something we've been on for... Since it happened.
Since we started.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
We're going 2 years ago. So, so this is a big deal to us, and we're biased towards the result, obviously. So Boehner finally allowed the congressional Republicans to do a committee. The Democrats were not going to boycott it, but I think seven of them voted for it, and two of them are going to be on the committee, which was going to amount to them sitting on their hands because they're not going to want to do what has to be done. Which is grill Hillary Clinton, right? I mean, ultimately, that's at the end of the day, that's what's going to have to happen.
Right.
If they're going to get answers. She's the one that's going to have to provide them, or the answers will lack credibility. And to get them, they're going to have to grill her. They're not going to be able to be afraid of her like they were when Darrell Issa had his investigation in a normal congressional committee. This is a special committee being sponsored. But the problem is, and I think you and I think feared this when we started seeing these mailers and they were fundraising off this. The Republicans and a lot of establishment Republicans were saying, don't try to make money off this. Don't fundraise for your campaigns. You're going to politicize it. Well, they succeeded in politicizing it because now what's happening is Boehner has said, okay, I'm going to allow you to have your special committee if you back off on this immigration reform heat that you're giving me. And so that's what happened. So now he has come out and said, look, it's their committee. They're going to have to own the results of that. Well, that ain't exactly a pat on the back. I mean, you know,
right.
Would you take that as a vote of confidence from your speaker?
It's not.
The head of your party in Congress? I mean, you know, this guy's three steps from the presidency, and this is what he's giving you? You know, so then you have other establishment guys like McCain and McConnell and these guys coming out saying, look, this is not going to go well for the Republicans. This is not going to go well for us because you're going to have to find something new. If not, you're going to look like a bunch of tinfoil hat-wearing pile owners who are just trying to derail Hillary's presidential bid, and all you're going to do is push her forward because you're going to look like what you are, which is just a political party trying to stop her from becoming the nominee, which automatically adds credibility to her campaign, right? Because why would you be putting those efforts in if you weren't afraid of her as the nominee?
Right.
Because it ain't about keeping her from the presidency. It's about if she becomes a nominee, we're screwed, right? That's what it looks like. Then you have other Republicans saying, look, if you find something new, well, now you've made Daryl Issa and the two other congressmen who escaped my memory at the moment, who've held their own individual investigations and found nothing. Like, Issa has not been able to act on anything that he discovered in his investigation. And he's upset at Boehner for allowing this special committee. So there's a couple things going on here. Number one, they're going to come out as not looking good, because they've already made this about a political football, about taking stabs at the current administration and its leader, the president. And they're going to make the rest of their party not either look like dummies, or they're going to make themselves look like idiots for just chasing this rabbit down a hole because you want to just derail her campaign. But the underlying issue is you have them all sniping at each other. The Civil War that I mentioned 3, 4, 5 podcasts ago, you know, it looks like it's starting to rev up. And where are we? We're at election time. This is typical. I mean, it's typical. Right at the moment of truth, when it's time to put the ball in the hoop, these guys cannot do it. They just can't do it. It's just insane. And this thing is going to blow up in their face because they've decided to make it a political campaign instead of an investigation as to why 4 Americans, including an ambassador of the United States, died without anyone coming to their aid.
Yeah.
Even attempting to get there, whether they were going to be successful or not. I mean, we were in, dude, for 22 years. You don't leave people behind.
Right.
Whether or not you're successful in getting to them alive, you don't just turn your back. You make an effort, even if you think that effort will fail. You make an effort to go, because that's how we operate. But no one seems to care about that. All they're trying to do is look good on C-SPAN and figure out a way to take jabs at Hillary Clinton. And let me tell you something else, what's going to happen. She's going to mop the floor with these morons. I mean, they're just not putting their best effort. The head of the committee, this sharp dude that you like from, I think he's from
Gowdy, Trey Gowdy.
The only guy who's going to be able to hold his weight with her. That's right. It. The rest of them is a gang who can't shoot straight. She is going to mop the floor with them if she even shows up. That's the other thing. They have no subpoena power. They're not going to be able to compel her to come. And so what they're thinking is, oh, well, we'll tell her, make her come, and she won't come. And we say, ah, see, you don't want to talk about it. And McConnell's saying that's exactly what the Democrats want you to do. You fools. You're swinging at a pitch in the dirt. And Grover Norquist is right. When you swing at a pitch in the dirt, you are the idiot, not the person who threw it. So it just drives me bonkers watching these guys in the run-up to an election. I mean, they find ways to snatch victory from, you know, from the jaws of defeat. It's just crazy. It's just crazy.
Snatching defeat from the jaws of victory.
I got so wound up, I can't even think straight, because it's just, it was there. It was there for the taking. And it looks like, you know, well, and the Senate is separate. You know, McConnell's like, hey, we're not touching this because we got a chance to win the Senate. And if we get involved in this, we're going to lose. We're going to lose it. And we can't afford that, because the Senate now is more important, winning the Senate, than it is this committee. Which tells you that committee is not about finding the truth. And that's the shame of it all. The American people are the ones being screwed here. The survivors, the families of the 4 men killed are being screwed here. And again, it's our Congress in action, which if you watch C-SPAN for any length of time, it'll make you sick to think these are our elected officials. It's just horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah. All right. So Republicans getting ready to throw the ball game. All right. And that's tonight's Hardcore Politics. Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? All right, tonight's Culture Clash, Francis. We're going to talk about the NFL draft a little bit, and the Michael Sam incident coverage aspect of the first openly gay player that's declared that he's openly gay getting drafted in the NFL. Just a couple of things real quick here to set up the discussion. He was the co-defensive player of the year for the SEC.
Right. Played at Missouri.
Had a terrible combine, which, you know, I mean, if you're a football fanatic, you can debate the impact that has. But he had a bad 40 time, and he didn't bench press very well. And those are two of the big factors. Was drafted fourth from last in the seventh round.
Which is the final round, right? So
the final round. So
he almost was not drafted.
The last guy drafted in the seventh round is every year is called Mr. Irrelevant. So he was drafted by St. Louis, which is close. You know, he played for Missouri. So just one other fact that before we start the conversation is that, you know, he was drafted in the seventh round and TV cameras were in his home.
ESPN
now,
cameras.
ESPN, who was covering the draft. And, you know, from the second round down, as you said earlier, Francis, normally from the second round down, there's a lot of those guys you don't even see.
You're lucky if you see guys in the second round after the fifth pick of the second round.
Yeah. So, you know, the controversy being, and I will I'll tell you my experience because I watched it. And I was actually kind of taking a nap at the time. I'd fallen asleep. I woke up right when he got the phone call, I guess.
Yes, it was about 2 in the afternoon.
Yes, it was.
You old bastard.
That was a good one. It was a good nap. So, you know, he gets the call. And of course, the controversy is people are saying, if you were uncomfortable that he kissed his boyfriend, that's on you. You need to get over it. Well, I watched it, okay? He gets the call. He cries uncontrollably. I don't have any issues with that. The guy standing next to him is rubbing his back and kind of trying to, you know, give him some support. Doesn't take too long to figure out, okay, this must be his boyfriend.
He's not his agent, right?
Ain't his agent. So he kind of finally kind of stands up, gets himself together, and, you know, he turns around and kisses his boyfriend. And I was like, okay, you know, the guy's gay. All right, no big deal. And he cries a little bit more and then kisses him again and then again. And then they're in a full-on embrace kissing. Now, see, this is the part that doesn't get tense. And I'm going to tell you honestly, and you can judge me if you want, I started grabbing for the remote because I'm like, I don't want to see this shit. This is the NFL draft.
Right.
Okay? Right. Don't tell me that if there ain't a couple million guys out there watching right now that 99.9% of them don't feel exactly the way I do. Because if he'd have been kissing his girlfriend the way he's kissing his boyfriend, I don't know that I'd have liked it a whole lot better. You understand?
Right.
It was just, we're watching the draft.
Right, right.
And so my issue with it is, and, you know, I cited Reggie Miller earlier. Reggie Miller gave a interview in which he said, hey, this is the way it is. You just need to get over it. If you're uncomfortable, that's a you problem. That's on you. This is the new world. This is the new society, blah, blah, blah. And then he gets asked by Dan Patrick, well, what about, you know, when they show up for training camp and everything else? Then Miller goes, oh, well, this is just about football. This isn't about anything else but football. Well, you lying bastard. I don't even think you're smart enough to know you just contradicted yourself.
Absolutely does not. Absolutely
because you just said it's not just about football.
Right.
ESPN having cameras in there for the seventh round draft pick, it's not just about football,
right.
Which is okay. That's fine.
Right. It is a historic moment.
We understand it's a historic moment.
But yeah.
Don't tell me that I got to be comfortable watching two guys hooking it up on my TV screen.
Right.
That's hypocrisy.
And let's clear up this. There's a couple myths going on out there. Like, well, but, you know, the same thing happens when guys are there kissing their girlfriends. No, we watch the draft like more than normal human beings watch it. Like, who the hell watches that to the seventh round other than people like us with no lives? You never see guys tonguing their girlfriends for 3 minutes on camera.
Uh-uh.
Never.
No.
You never see that. I don't care what anyone says. That's a load of crap. That's not the same. There is no equality there because you never see it. Do you see guys get a little emotional? Sure.
The guy hug their mamas, realized, hug their girlfriends,
sure,
give them a kiss.
He just realized a boyhood dream, and he's not going to be the next Jackie Robinson because, let's face it, he just don't have those kind of skills. But it's a watershed moment because you know, he's going to be the first openly gay player in the NFL. That's a big deal. NFL's the biggest sport in the world. although footballers would probably say something different. But so it was a big moment. And I get that. But yeah, the excessive exploitation, I think, is the word you use.
Yeah,
by ESPN was I thought ridiculous, and the fact that I have to then somehow, because Reggie Miller and a host of people of sports analysts on Twitter saying, well, if you got a problem with this, you're the problem.
Damn, they're everybody in the media,
right? And I just was like, well, that's silly, because I know homosexuals who have problems watching heterosexuals engage in that amount of affection. So why is it okay in that way? Why is it okay for someone else to feel uncomfortable, but I can't feel uncomfortable seeing that? I mean, I agree with you. Like the one peck on the lips, okay, I get it.
Right. Yeah.
But a makeout session, really? What was the point of that?
And I mean, if you didn't see it, the whole thing, what happened is being misrepresented in the media.
Right.
Because they're
right.
Saying, well, if you were uncomfortable, no, I watched.
They're
the first
showing
time.
The one picture. Okay. And that's it. They are not filling in the context.
Right? And I'm telling you, I was watching it, and, you know, I mean, I'm ambivalent because it's not my issue, but I don't really have any issue against it either. I mean, we've talked about this before. The guy's gay. He's a football player. You know, pursue your dream. This
right,
is America.
Right.
But when you exploit it, you throw it in my face, and I'm not talking about Michael Sam. I'm talking
right.
about ESPN and the media. You exploit it, throw it in my face, and then point the finger at me if
right.
I say I don't like it. Well, right. You know what? Fuck you.
Right. No, I'm with you. That was the funny part to me. You know, now you could, I mean, I watched the NFL channel for the watch the draft, and of course they didn't show that because they don't have the rights to show ESPN on their station.
Yeah.
So I didn't see that. I had to watch it afterwards. But they turn around, like you say, I mean, and if you're watching ESPN, you can't get away from it. But by God, you better love it, or we're gonna say you've got the problem. Well, I mean, that's just stupid on its face. I mean, I can't believe anyone, homosexual or heterosexual, would follow that logic.
Well,
and think that that's
just,
okay.
It's just disappointing to understand and grasp and see the agendas that the
right.
media can drive in this country. I mean,
and the problem is they're not helping the equality of homosexuals. They're actually hurting it, because if until you consider yourself to be equal, you'll never be equal amongst your peers.
Right.
And so, and that's kind of what Dan Patrick was getting at. Like, you're a seventh rounder. You shouldn't have cameras in your... But they came because you're the first gay player. Leave it at that.
Right.
Instead, they went on to have this display.
Trot you out like a trained dolphin or something.
It's very contrived and,
yeah.
display.
Yeah.
You know, as Patrick hit it right on the head, I thought, it was more reality show than it was draft. So... Do you want to be a football player or not?
And if you want to do that, do it in a different context.
Right.
See, and then I don't have to... I'm watching the draft.
Right, right.
That's what I'm doing. And I'm not watching it for that social agenda.
So I just, you know, it just seemed all silly to me. The media reaction about the media's reaction afterwards was so ridiculously stupid. I'm thinking,
yeah, it was.
My God. This is what we've gotten to? These guys create the story... Then they ridicule people ridiculing the story, you know, just so they could generate more news for, you know, and drag this on for three days.
Yeah.
The issue is, the bottom line issue is, he is going to struggle to make this squad. They have got a defensive line that has got nothing but Hall of Fame potential on it. And he's just not that good. You know what I mean? Like, seventh round,
right.
That was probably pretty accurate. People are saying, oh, that you know, that's the homophobic NFL. He should have gone in fourth or fifth round. No way
no
is this
way.
Guy a fourth round draft
Nobody
pick.
Said that.
Right.
I mean, nobody credible said that.
Right.
And the other thing is, let's face it, if the dude was a spot-on, daggone football player...
He would have got drafted.
They right. wouldn't have cared.
Right. Oh, right.
I mean, it would have been a big story, but they would, you know, if you're a good player, they'd draft you.
Right. As one girl said, what she called Dan Patrick, if you can play, you can stay.
That's right.
The bottom line in NFL. That's the bottom line in college. If you can bring it, if he was that much of a stud, he would have been drafted earlier, and there never would have been said boo about it, because everyone would have been trying to get him.
Yeah.
He's not Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, let's just face the facts.
Right.
He may make the squad. I mean, you know, he may be a third stringer. If he sees any significant playing time, I'd be surprised.
Yeah.
And I'm rooting for the kid, you know, because it is a historic moment. A lot
sure.
of that's been thrust on him.
Right.
But I have to say, I don't know if you agree with this or not, he pulled a lot of it on himself. He didn't have to let that business in his home happen.
Right.
He certainly got an agent because he's in the draft. Someone should have pulled him aside and said, bro, This ain't the way.
Right.
This ain't the way. This right. is, you know, show up as a football player, make your bones, and then say to them, this is my lifestyle. But right. I'm a football player.
Well, we even talked about that the first time we talked about Michael Sam is don't let a group make you an agenda.
Right. That's right. That's right.
If you want to be a football player, then do that and people will support
you. Hate Tiger Woods all you want, but he has managed a whole career in not becoming an agenda.
Right.
But being a golfer. He brought his game and that was it. I mean, Jim Brown criticizes him nonstop
right.
because he doesn't get into black issues. And Tiger looks at the camera with a straight face because he is honest about this. I'm not an activist. I'm a golfer.
Right.
Because he sees himself as equal to everyone else.
That's his choice.
Right. And he is equal because he views himself as equal. But when you constantly view yourself as unequal, as something different than everyone else, don't be surprised when people treat you differently.
Then you need an agenda to drive that
right.
train.
You can never achieve equality until you accept your own equality. I'm just a guy. I'm just a football player. If I allow my orientation to become the agenda, then that's what I am.
Right.
I'm no longer a football player, a dude trying to live out his dream. I'm now trying to drive an agenda, and I have a willing press in ESPN to do it.
Right. All right. Media agendas, tonight's version of the Culture Clash. And now it's time for another scintillating edition to Go to School with the Political Pop Quiz. This is your chance to pit your political knowledge against the prodigious political knowledge of the Pope of the podcast.
My favorite song.
Say that with respect. If you haven't had a chance to pick up the home version yet, shame on you. You get a coupon for 4 free episodes of the podcast with any any version of the Unfiltered Unfettered home version of the Political Pop Quiz. So this is your chance to pit your political wits against the Pope of the podcast with 5 political trivia questions. And as always, like I like to say, just like California Chrome, I got my money on the Pope, baby, because he can bring it in the home stretch. All right.
And no Wikipedia here, my friends. We're all about research.
Question number 1. Dick Cheney served in what? And I need to remind you, Francis, don't immediately answer. Give our audience a chance.
Even if I get excited, I'll hold on.
Yes. Dick Cheney served in what position on the cabinet of President George H.W. Bush? Dick Cheney served in what position on the cabinet of President George H.W. Bush? If you're playing along at home, please answer now. Pope, do you have an answer?
He was Secretary of Defense.
Secretary of Defense. Dude was around for a long time.
Yeah, you think he'd be a better shot.
Huh?
You think he'd be a better shot with a shotgun.
Okay, question number 2. Can you name the current Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court? Can you name the current Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court?
Dude.
If you're playing along at home, answer now. Pope, do you have an answer?
Justice Roberts.
2 for 2. It's a little bit like the thing Jay Leno used to play. I'm just wondering if everybody's getting these.
You're throwing these right in my wheelhouse here, bro.
This is canny to a baby. I know that. Okay. A little tougher here. Which person was the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations from 1971 to 1973, then later president of the United States? Which person was the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations from 1971 to 1973, then later president of the United States? If you're playing along at home, answer now. Pope, do you have an answer? You look a little unsure.
The years are throwing me off. It can't be Gerald Ford, is it?
It is not Gerald Ford. George Bush.
George Bush. You're kidding. I did not know that.
I am not
I
kidding.
I never did a time in the CIA. I didn't realize he was the
ambassador to the United Nations.
I thought that. Did not know.
2 for 3. 2 for 3. Okay.
This graduation music's great.
I love it. Okay, and the staff has not done me well tonight. I actually only have four questions, so this will be our final question. I am going to fire them. Heads will roll.
Yeah, really
well. I have learned from the Obama administration how to take care of business.
Right.
What president's foreign policy has often been called big stick diplomacy?
Oh, God, come on.
What president's foreign policy has often been called big stick diplomacy? If you're playing along at home, answer now. Pope, do you have an answer?
Big Teddy. Teddy Roosevelt.
Theodore Roosevelt.
I feel so bad for missing number three now. I feel ashamed.
And you... You brought it. You brought it in the home stretch. 4 for 3 on the political pop quiz. How'd you do at home? I doubt you beat the Pope. And
well,
Pope...
I mean, in all fairness, I mean... Like, presidential history was my specialty and my major. So, I mean, it's not like...
It's politics. The president's part of that.
I should be ashamed of that George H.W. I can't believe I missed that.
Okay, Pope, listeners, you have graduated from the political pop quiz.
Now let's go out drinking.
I got a problem, and my problem about to get me down. Yes, I got 3 big problems, y'all, and my problem about to get me down. Yeah, I got a problem with my woman, with my girlfriend, and my wife.
Francis, I think we have a couple of pretty big problems tonight that we want to rail about.
Yeah, so this teenage girl gets kicked out of her prom. And I'll read the actual headline and then give you what I know that really means. Because several dads said that she was causing the boys at the prom to have impure thoughts because of her manner of dress. That's a load of crap. Right. I think we both know that's code for we were leering at this girl and we got busted, so we had sent her home because we were having impure thoughts about a 17-year-old girl.
So this girl's from Virginia. They had a dress code, which she observed. The dress had to be as long as her fingertips hanging by her side. It was like a gold, sparkly kind of a tight dress. I mean, she's a 17-year-old girl going to the prom.
It wasn't even a low neck. I mean, like... That dress is moderate compared to what kids are wearing.
I would say. Good-looking girl. You know, I mean, yeah, she was a sharp-looking young lady. But I'm with you, Francis.
So as a father of a young daughter, and we already talked about this.
Yeah.
Had my daughter appeared at my door at 8 o'clock at night when she should be at her prom saying, 2 old dudes told me that I was making all the boys horny, and I had to go,
right,
I'd have drove my car right through that gym.
Right.
And I would have started beating the ass of all the adults I got my hands on.
Because the first thing, they made her check the dress, right? They said, well, we don't think that dress is within the dress code standard.
Yeah.
And she checked it, and it was fine. And then they said she was dancing lasciviously or something like that.
Yeah,
they hadn't even started dancing yet. All the kids said... We weren't even dancing. We were just kind of standing around in the crowd, and some people had kind of started...
Which is bopping, right?
You know, yeah. And they went down and said, you're causing the boys to have impure thoughts. Somebody would have lost some teeth.
Right. Because there's a couple perverts who decided that they were going to out loud say, we can't stop staring at your ass, so you got to go.
Yeah.
Are you serious with this? I mean, how these dudes aren't pulled out into the town square and flogged in public,
and
I
let's
no
be
idea.
Clear, this was a prom... A homeschool prom. So I'm guessing it was a collection of parents that are in a homeschool program.
Right.
Or something. Not that that has a lot to do with it, but...
Ultimately, I mean, if you were to say this was at some ultra-Christian, like Oral Roberts, or some school like that, where they have a severe, almost Sharia-type code at that school, okay.
Well, but I could still see them maybe sending her home for the dress. But not to say you're causing,
right,
boys that have impure thoughts? What kind of bullshit is that?
Well, because does that not beg the question, how do you know that?
Yeah. Did you ask him?
And of course, he can't answer that question because then he has to say, for that to be true, he has to say, well, they told me. And then the next question will be, which ones told you that? And those kids are going to hang that dude out to dry. We never said that because they didn't, because the dude's just a pervert, right? I mean, it's just, yeah. Again, I'm driving my car right onto the basketball court. And the first adult that I see in my vision is getting their ass beat. I mean, just insane. I mean, to do that to this girl.
I know.
And now make her a national story. How stupid do these morons feel now? Now, because now everyone's reacting the way we're reacting.
Yeah.
Well, it's just a couple old pervs who are leering at this 17-year-old girl. You know.
It's pathetic.
I'd hate to go to these guys' houses and check their browser history. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, like, that just incenses me, dude. The stupidity. Keep it to yourself. Go home and just, you know, whatever. Why do you got to embarrass a girl like this? I mean, I just don't.
It's like, you know, like the Jim Bakers of the world, right?
Right, right. Or the or with Jerry Falwell, you know, when he gets busted with the hooker.
No, it wasn't Jerry Falwell. It was the guy from Louisiana. Daggone it, Francis. Now I'm going to have to think of that.
And wasn't it Jerry Falwell who threw himself down on his church's altar begging forgiveness?
No. Don't disrespect the memory of Jerry Falwell.
Oh, for God's sake. Really?
No, not really. I don't think Jerry Falwell was a bad guy. He was a religious guy. He never got caught up in any of these scandals. It was, daggone it.
Oh, you're right. Jerry Falwell was kind of the larger gentleman, right?
Yeah. He was involved in some scandals, but...
The guy I'm thinking of got caught with hookers and, like, threw himself down in front of his congregation on national TV.
I have sinned against you.
Right. I've sinned against you. I got caught.
I've sinned against you because I've been jerking off looking at hookers.
Doing more than looking at them. For years, by the way.
Okay, I'll think of it.
It wasn't Falwell, but his first name was Jerry.
Ah, daggone it. I'll think of it. Let's go on to our next problem, because this is a...
it's
going to
keep you up at night now.
Yeah.
All right, so the other issue here, I think, has been a joint... issue. Our boy Bradley Manning, or like he's Cher now, right? What's he going by? What's his Stephanie? What's he going by? His, I don't know.
Melissa? I don't
There's
know.
Another one. Just gonna give. Anyway, so Bradley Manning, the WikiLeaks leaker, the sergeant, this lowly sergeant who got his hands on all the world's documents and leaked them to WikiLeaks, went to prison, served a 35-year term. Go ahead, you got it? Jimmy Swagger, that's it. It wasn't Jerry, it was a Jimmy.
Jimmy Swagger.
All right, Jimmy Swagger. All right, so Bradley Manning diagnosed as a transsexual, have transsexual disorder, and the Defense Department allowed him to undergo a sex change. This is after he got sentenced to 35 years in prison for what he did. Leavenworth, that is.
Yeah, right.
That was under the... Bob Gates.
Chelsea Manning.
You are on it tonight, dude. So he undergoes a sex change. He becomes Chelsea Manning. But there's follow-on drugs and psychotherapy that goes along with
this. Has he even really had the surgery yet?
That's unclear in the article. They never really get down to that. But the treatments that he's seeking indicate to me that he's had the surgery. My wife didn't seem to think so. But it's hard to say. I might have missed that part of the article. But he has since now gotten an unprecedented move. The current Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel, has greenlighted his transfer to a civilian prison so that he can get the treatment for this quote-unquote disorder. No military prisoner has ever been transferred to a civilian prison for any reason. But because transsexuals are barred from serving in the military, they're not going to treat him at Leavenworth because that would admit that he's a transsexual, which they then can no longer treat because they're not allowed to be in the military. I mean, they're in this gigantic, you know, dog chasing their tail situation, and they can't discharge him because then you can't keep him in a military prison.
Right, right.
So they transfer him to a civilian prison so he can get this treatment, and that's where he's going to do his 35 years. I mean, I don't care where he serves his time. Whether he serves all. I mean, who cares? It's the bending over backwards for a guy who kind of betrayed his country. Betrayed
not
his own.
Not kinda.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm trying to straddle the line between the people who think he did something good.
And here's the trick, because I know there's some people out there that probably support this bullshit, but the day after sentencing, his attorney come out and issued a press release saying that she is now a female,
right,
and asked that she be referred to by her new name, Chelsea, right, and feminine pronouns.
Right, right, right.
Hey, Jack Wagon, you should have thought of that a couple of years ago. Not after you get sent to prison and come out and go, oh, by the way.
Right. I'm a
you
girl.
Know,
yeah.
By the way, I'm a girl now.
Trapped
I want to be a girl
body.
Trapped in a man's body. Hey, too damn bad. You got sentenced as a dude. Serve your frickin' time as a dude.
Well,
I don't
right.
give a that, shit.
Well, and that's a great point. You got sentenced as one identity. I don't know. The whole thing is ridiculous to me. It's the going out of their way for a prisoner who, in my mind, doesn't deserve that. And I kind of lay this at Bob Gates' feet. He should have never greenlighted this sex change. That's my God, I almost got thrown out because I had my eyes, my vision corrected in 93, back when they were doing it with a scalpel, not a laser.
Right.
And I almost got bounced out of the Air Force for that because I did it without asking permission. This, I just got issues with the way they're going about bending over backwards for a guy who ultimately betrayed his country.
Well,
betrayed his oath, betrayed his comrades.
Betrayed his company. I mean, they used to have a specific penalty for traitors to their countries, which we don't do anymore.
Right, right.
Right. They used to say, don't come back or we'll shoot you.
Right.
It's not just the bending over backwards. They're spending our money on this guy.
That was my wife's issue. Like, wait, are we paying for that?
Yes, we are.
You've paid for it already. It's not paying. You've paid. Your tax dollars that fund the defense paid for that. That's what's so bizarre that, because the Defense Department really gets into these mamby-pamby issues. And I guess people could judge me for making light of this, but the bottom line, they've diagnosed him with this, meaning it's an illness. Are transsexuals willing to say that they're sick? What I mean? Like, he's been diagnosed with transsexual disorder. That's what they've given the name they've given to his disease.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean?
But Francis, if you look through what is it, the medical encyclopedia, there's a medical diagnosis. I don't know what it is. I've dealt with it before sometimes loosely in my job, but it's the encyclopedia of diagnosis.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them are bullshit. Just because something becomes a diagnosis, it's not like saying it's like I heard a comedian talking about the other day that his friend got diagnosed with alcoholism. It's a disease, right? His other buddy got diagnosed with cancer, right? So they were comparing notes. They're like, hey, what's happening to you? Well, I got to go through chemotherapy. I got to go through radiation treatments. My hair's falling out every night. How about you? The other guy says, I'm just drinking every night.
Right,
I mean, because it's a diagnosis, and I'm not trying to make light of anything.
No, I'm with you.
I'm trying to say because it's a diagnosis, those things are made for insurance reasons and all kinds of
right.
reasons that don't necessarily have to do. And your wife and my wife probably know far more about this than I
right,
do. But
right.
But all that is well and good. It's not an illness like cancer, a bladder infection,
right.
a gallstone.
No, I agree. All I'm saying is it now appears in court documents as a disease. And they sued on that basis to get his transfer. Doesn't that feel like a precedent-setting movement?
I mean,
now you're saying it's no longer. I'm no longer born this way. I have an affliction in which I need treatment for. How do you make
right.
the claim that? Well, I'm born this way. This isn't a choice. I was born this way. No, the court just said you got a disease. There's just all kinds kinds of wrong with this issue.
If you want to hack off your junk and start wearing high heels, go ahead. I just don't want to do it on my dime. That's
right.
all.
Yeah.
All right, we got big problems tonight. Sons of broken sons of.
We don't like nothing.
No.
Right
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
All right, Francis. One of our favorite people back in the news, Pope Francis.
My man.
Came out in the new, in a article in a well, and he was talking somewhere, and it got recorded, and said, "You know what?
Did he know he was getting recorded? Damn it.
Oh, yeah. He said he'd baptize Martians if they come.
He's pro-Martian.
He's not going to judge. He's
going I knew, you know what? I didn't read this. When I saw that you put it on there, I thought, I'm going to wait to hear this. I don't want to ruin it. But I kind of figured it was one of these deals where he's saying, look, come one, come all, I'll baptize
come one,
everybody.
That's pretty much what he said.
Right.
Hey, if the Martians come, I'll baptize them. I just took it as, I figure the Pope is a guy with the inside track.
Right. I kind of thought that's where you were going with that.
And if he's saying, I'm going to baptize aliens when they come, I'm getting a little nervous.
Right, like they're close,
like,
right?
What are you got some inside info you want to share with us here? Or what? You laying the groundwork for something?
That's my
sign of the apocalypse.
He took heat for saying he'd baptize homosexuals, but this is not Christ's representative on Earth. I mean, come on,
that's right.
He'll baptize those Martians.
Take one, take all. Fran, what's your sign of the apocalypse?
Well, mine now. I'm ashamed now at mine, but I'm going to say it anyway. You know, because you've been. It's kind of funny. Like the first 10 times we did this bit, I was jabbing you because you were actually throwing out real signs of the apocalypse. And I was throwing out these ridiculously stupid stories. And then the last 3 or 4 times,
yeah,
I've been going serious, like the MERS virus.
I think you brought the MERS down on us.
Well, I was going to do it again because there's more cases in the U.S.
Yes.
And I decided I'm not touching that.
That's exactly what I decided.
I went the other way. Now I'm talking about the great Satan, Miley Cyrus.
Miley.
Oral sex on a blow-up, an anatomically correct blow-up doll during her concert. Now, I don't know, like, you're going to have to help me with your bigger music person than I am. Like, is she still drawing the teeny boppers to her concerts?
Hold up.
What?
All right, for you to say I'm a bigger music person than is accurate, but for the throw Miley Cyrus at me.
Well, no, but I'm saying, like, what is her demographic like? Is it still teeny boppers?
No, I think it's like a young adult crowd,
okay, so
I'm
this
guessing.
Wouldn't, it's not like she... Is that like she's
not like she blew a doll in front of a bunch of 8 and 9 year olds?
Right, that's what,
I don't think so.
I wasn't really sure about that, so I didn't want to say it. But I just thought
it was a dude doll. Was it a dude doll?
Oh yeah, circus pony. I mean, he was he was packing, and she, dude, right down on it. I could not, you know, and it, look, when you're on AOL News and there's a gigantic banner that says NSFW, which means not safe for work if you're internet savvy.
Uh-huh.
Miley Cyrus has sex with a blow-up doll. I'm like, well, I'm clicking that.
Yeah.
I'm clicking it. Right. I mean, and that's what that's for, right? That's to make you click it.
Right.
So I clicked that headline, and there's a picture. She's holding the blow-up doll, and he's looking happy. He's at attention, and she's working him. And I'm like, how is she getting away with that? Like, are we steps away from public sex acts between two actual people? Like, I mean, this is not some back alley in Rio. She's on a stage in Houston. I mean, how in the world is she? You know what I mean? Like,
I'll just say this. It's a serious observation about this. And I don't know, because lots of times we say, oh, society's getting worse, it's getting worse. I mean, I remember going to see Alice Cooper when he performed mock guillotines on the stage with dolls and put them in a guillotine and boom. And, you know, it was like the worst thing ever. Right. It was the same conversation. Like, how can this guy be doing this? And and what does this mean? And, you know, it was kind of the same conversation. And, of course, Alice Cooper now plays golf on the Pro-Am.
Right.
And he's sober.
That's all
he does.
He is so fanatical about golf. It's insane to look and say, that's Alice Cooper out there playing.
So, I mean, I don't know. And I guess I am really kind of trying to compare the two. But you know, sometimes we look at some of this and say, oh, it's going to hell. But, you know,
so
it's pretty wild stuff that's happened along the way.
Is social media amplifying this more so than Alice Cooper?
I think maybe. Because, you know, then we had the Marilyn Manson deal and all of his shenanigans. And so we've occasionally had these people creep
up.
Let me throw this
out there, and this is where your music acumen comes into play, because I really know nothing. But wouldn't you say, though, that Alice Cooper, and especially Marilyn Manson, are a certain
yes.
corner of the musical world yes. that mainstreamers generally don't inhabit.
Yes.
Is that a fair statement?
I would say.
Sort of. I mean, like Miley Cyrus is closer to, I would never really hear Marilyn Manson on a radio station that I would listen to, but Miley Cyrus's songs would come on. You know what I mean? Like, right. she's more of the top 40, not now, I guess, but. Manson, I don't know if Cooper was in his day.
I guess it's more mainstream.
I don't know.
Alice Cooper did write songs about having sex with dead people and stuff like that. And I mean, it was.
But was he a top 40?
It was all shocks.
I mean?
Like, yeah, he had some top 40 hits, like "No More Mr. Nice Guy." I'm 18.
Right. See, that's the stuff you would know. But Marilyn Manson surely wasn't.
No, I don't think Marilyn Manson was top 40. No.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, she's a mainstream recording artist.
Yeah, I'd say.
Who and her. And look, her turn is whatever that was show that she was on.
The Music Awards show, right.
No.
Hannah Montana.
Hannah Montana, right. Yeah. Basically, it was her Mickey Mouse Club.
Right.
Right. You know, I think adds to this apocalyptic
idea of the young
arc
lady gone
that
bad.
She's on.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, she steps away from being the beast, right? I mean, you know, blood raining from the sky and brimstone and all
that. Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's my effort tonight.
All right, Miley Cyrus, honey, clean it up, you know? Clean it up a little bit.
Get a room.
Get a blow-up doll on stage. Oh, goodness. She needs to go see the Pope. I think that's what she needs. She needs
to
spend a little time with Francis.
Look, you could say you baptized Marcus all day long. He come out and say he baptized Miley Cyrus, then I'm going to say, all right, that dude's for real. Because, right, when was the last time we talked about her? When a girl threw her panties up on stage and she ate them.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's disgusting. I don't care who you are.
Yeah, that's pretty disgusting.
You know.
Yeah.
So, the Pope's going to drop, you know, hit her with some holy water.
It ain't exactly Ozzy Osbourne disgusting, but it's close.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Episode 47, getting ready to wrap it up. Fran, we got anything coming out of Frank's place?
Yeah, still working on my pink eye story.
Yeah.
I've had reoccurring bouts, and so it's been hard for me to type.
Oh, my goodness.
So I'll get off my rear end there pretty soon.
All right, episode 47, getting ready to put it in the books, barring the end of the world. We will be
thanks, Miley.
Back next week with episode 48. So everybody, stay safe, stay smart, and we are out.
Thanks, Tony and Fran, for getting us unfiltered and unfettered.